Ubuntu, program 2. Ubuntu, Ubuntu, Ubuntu. I am because we are. I am John Kelch. Welcome to our program. Today, we'll talk about the pluses and minuses of teams. Why are they effective in achieving their goals? Why do they screw up so frequently and fail? What are the mechanisms that control success and precipitate failure? I'll present the pluses and minuses alternating between the two. A team consists of two or more people in working together and supporting each other to achieve a goal or goals, which are essentially positive for the survival and the benefit of the whole. Seeking what is positive for survival is what differentiates a team from a mob. A mob consists of a group, usually more than two people, working in concert, if not necessarily together, to achieve a goal or goals, which are essentially aimed at the destruction of others. My book, Ubuntu, I Am Because We Are, is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold, and presents the total picture of the meaning and need for team in the Ubuntu sense. Check it out on my website, johnkelch.com. That's johnkelch.com. The first and strongest plus of team is shared labor. Whether voluntary or coerced, this allows much greater works to be accomplished than anyone could do by themselves. Consider the Nazi Germany Wehrmacht, a master of blitzkrieg, lightning war, the most powerful army on earth. They made the basic mistake of biting off more than they could chew. They were chewing up Europe, poised to invade and conquer England, and despite having a non-aggression pact with Russia, chose to open a second front and invade Russia. Ultimately, that decision was a key factor in their losing World War II. Russia had a bigger team, more people. Aided by Germany continuing to fight in Europe, the two front wars split Germany's team resources and gave Russia time to get it together, and eventually repulsed the invasion and reversed it all the way to Berlin. From the viewpoint of team, Russia had more shared labor available. The first minus of teams is leaders are required at multiple levels, and frequently the level and attaining and maintaining it becomes more powerful than leading. To use again the example of Nazi Germany, Hitler had seized power as a ruthless demagogue. Naturally, he was fearful of the same being done to him. He was callous in exercising personal control over virtually everything and merciless towards those who, in his judgment, had failed him. His orders and his choices were most frequently the cause of the failures, but others paid for them. This was a climate that proved fatal for lower-level leaders and made the climb to higher levels challenging, to say the least. Questionable, too. I mean, is it really intelligent to try to be the next person to stand on the trapdoor with a noose already fitted around your neck? In turn, this undoubtedly kept capable lower-level leaders wavering in their desire to advance and provide more productive leadership. The second plus of team support from others as needed. Often this support comes from unexpected and lowly regarded parts of the team. To change up on examples, let's talk about Neil Armstrong, the first human to set foot on the moon. Among the thousands of scientists, engineers, manufacturers, politicians, and others on the team, there was a group known as human computers. They were mathematicians charged with the drudgery of ensuring complex mathematical calculations were completed correctly. This was a tiresome task that the, quote, real scientists, unquote, considered beneath them. In addition, these human computers were black women. I mean, you couldn't expect much from them, could you? These women included Katherine Coleman Goebel Johnson and Dorothy Vaughan. Katherine identified problems with the spacecraft's heat shields. She made calculations of orbital mechanics that were critical to the success of NASA crewed spaceflights. On Friendship 7, John Glenn requested her review of the calculations when the computer wasn't handling the task. She not only corrected the calculations, she added the suggestion that they not fire the heat shield rockets until the landing, a critical element in a successful flight. Dorothy Vaughan found out about the new computers being installed, self-taught herself Fortran, and became the acting supervisor of the computer department, the first African-American to supervise NASA personnel in a key element of the program. These hidden figures, of whom little was expected, provided essential team support to the success of America's space program. The second minus of team is competitiveness, his competitors, becomes win at all costs, negating team goals. The intrinsic struggle for power in team forces competitiveness over who is better suited to be the leader. Competition, when it works well, defines the better leader for a given position. More often, it becomes a battle within itself, and winning that battle is paramount over team goals. This is a good description of politics. Pick whatever side you want, and profuse examples exist of this occurring. The third plus of team is diversity of analysis, viewpoints, and intellect to resolve issues. The Greek concept of the idea of democracy is a direct example. They created a triumvirate group government, the Areopagus, an aristocratic council with lots of money and power, the Council of 500 with some money and power, which was an elected group of people others vote for, and the Ecclesia, or assembly, with everybody else except slaves and women, and was an arena for debate by the people themselves. It worked well for them and directly brought us to where we are. Third minus of team is problem identification focuses on destroying opposition, not attaining goals. Problem resolution from this viewpoint is invariably destructive and counterproductive. Wars start this way. George W. Bush initially identified the Iraq War as a response to 9/11, when he actually intended to outdo his father by destroying Saddam Hussein as his father had failed to do. This misplaced focus, along with delusions that the other guy will always cower in fear of us, led to another war we didn't win. The fourth plus of team is shared prosperity. A rising tide lifts all ships is the way it's stated. Truthfully, an efficient and effective team will make this saying true. The original employees of Apple all became millionaires. Original investors in Amazon have clearly succeeded, although employees not necessarily so much. Defining the limits of an effective team requires the inclusion of all of the we. If you look for problems in any organization, the line of demarcation occurs where shared team success stops. The fourth minus of team is group commitment fractures into cabals, and loyalty to the faction becomes more important than loyalty to the group. Problem identification and problem resolution are always accomplished most productively by team participation. If the issue is power, not the goals of the overall team, shifting power is still more easily defined and accomplished by sub-teams or cabals within the group than by individuals. This is the heart of team destruction native to the entire concept of team. Loss of focus on the team goals, for whatever reason, and commitment to the attainment of power as the true goal is the base seed for team failure, whether it's your Little League baseball team or your nation. We preach and honor team commitment as we must, but we do not nurture it as we should. Instead, we depend on rah-rah, slogans, be they Wildcats rule for your local team or make America great again for your nation. Rah-rah is a useless instrument to coerce support without true commitment, and it's more useful in chasing power than accomplishing team goals. Quick commercial. My book, Ubuntu, I Am Because We Are, is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold, and presents a total picture of the meaning and need for team in the Ubuntu sense. Check it out on my website, johnkelch.com. That's johnkelsch.com. The fifth plus of team is individual ability to contribute whatever assets you possess. In Vietnam, when I was a combat infantry platoon leader, I had a soldier whose nickname was Coyote. He looked like the human incarnation of Wild E. Coyote. I swear, that's the truth. He was not an extraordinary shot or anything else in terms of combat. He was a capable infantry soldier, but nothing special, except for one asset that made him priceless. Simply, he was the greatest point man who ever existed, and he was scary as hell. We would enter the boonies with him on point. He would sling his rifle over his shoulder, tuck his hands in his pockets, and stroll through the woods with nary a concern in the entire world. Scary, huh? He would come to a sudden stop, his head would jerk back, and he would raise his hand to call a halt. We would proceed with forewarned caution. He never, not once, walked us into an ambush. When he alerted, we always found Victor Charles close ahead or clear signs of his recent presence. Talk about a unique asset contributing to the team. He was the major reason that no man under my direct communication ever died. I was deeply honored and scared for his safety when he volunteered to go on one more patrol with me after his zeros had passed. As we walked out of the wire into the bush, he grinned and said, "Hey, who would you rather have on point?" I was relieved and proud when, after an uneventful patrol, I put him on a chopper to rendezvous with his freedom bird to home and told him, "Get your ugly face out of here and don't come back." The fifth minus of team is individual ability to contribute to the team is limited by divided loyalties, both in what the individual chooses to contribute and in what he, she is allowed to contribute. My first talk with my platoon in Vietnam, I said, "My job is to lead this platoon to accomplish whatever mission we're assigned. Your job is to follow me initially on faith until I've proved to you that I know what I'm doing. I have one rule I want everyone to adhere to. If I'm about to do something that you think isn't correct and may get people injured or dead, speak up. I may or may not follow your suggestions, but I will listen. You will get no grief from me for speaking out. Please note, however, if after the fact, when a mission has gone bad, people are injured or dead, and you say, 'I could have told you so,' you will receive significant grief for not having spoken up. I attribute part of my success in accomplishing missions and keeping my men alive to my open willingness to listen. On the other hand, unwillingness to listen can result in tragedy. We began running an ambush every night in the same location with transport and armored personnel carriers accompanied by tanks. We protested vociferously that this amounted to an invitation to Mr. Victor Charles to set up and nail us as we walked through the half-mile kill zone to our site. Command refused to listen, whether due to loyalty to staff or simple unwillingness to be bothered. Ultimately, the VC hit the first platoon, killing one man and wounding several others. Command changed the situation by having us walk all the way to the site rather than be transported, apparently thinking that would really fool Charlie. The sixth plus of team is group-powered commitment. I think one of the most amazing examples of group commitment generating a successful accomplishment against tremendous odds is the men's hockey tournament at Lake Placid in the 1980 Olympics. The Soviet Union had won the gold medal in five of the six previous games and were favorites to win in Lake Placid. The team consisted primarily of professional players with significant experience in international play. By contrast, the U.S. team consisted exclusively of amateur players and was the youngest team in the tournament and in the U.S. national team history. Both teams completed group play undefeated. In medal play, the U.S. tied Sweden 2-2, defeated second-place favorites Czechoslovakia 7-3, beat Russia in a gripping contest 4-3, and beat Finland in the final to win the gold medal. The overpowering sense of the key element to this accomplishment was the sheer commitment of the Americans to their goal. The sixth minus of team is prosperity diminishes and sharing equally peters out. Remember Woolworths, Montgomery Ward, JCPenney, Sears, soon, Kmart, and many others who have petered out? Across the board, you will find that they chose to maximize profits to shareholders and executives and not share prosperity within the team. This, of course, leads to such decisions as JCPenney discontinuing their profitable automotive department because they judged that while it was making money, it wasn't making enough money. Sears decided it would become a boutique store. Soon, the fewer employees were joined by fewer customers. They also teamed up with Kmart. Talk about a poor draft decision. While there are almost certainly other elements that contributed to the fate of these companies, failing to share prosperity equally is paramount on the list. The seventh plus of team is expanded problem identification and resolution. Another example from my time in sunny Southeast Asia. We stopped on a trail in Vietnam to take a break. I sat next to my squad leader. I looked down and spied a small snake crawling between us. It was red and black and yellow. My understanding was that coral snakes were not indigenous to Vietnam. Concerned, I said to my squad leader, "Reckon what kind of snake that is?" He glanced over, swiftly grabbed his machete, and in the blink of an eye, wham, 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 sliced it to pieces. He smiled, "Reckon we don't got to worry about it." Just a small example of expanded problem identification and resolution. Complex major issues such as developing the atom bomb, flying to the moon, cures for climate change in progress, not only benefit from expanded problem identification and resolution, they don't happen without it, and it doesn't happen without team. The seventh minus of team is analysis becomes a weapon of internecine warfare. Wars by their nature tend to be fought on land, sea, and in the air. In World War II, air power was the new kid on the block on both sides. Hermann Goering persuaded Hitler that he could conquer England from the air, so no resources were devoted to developing and building troop transport capacity to cross the English Channel. This resulted in the Nazis sitting along the coast waiting to repel the biggest invasion in history. They didn't. On the Allied side, the internecine struggle over air power was between daylight bombing, where you could see the target, but would lose more planes and crews, and nighttime bombing, where the crews were safer, but hitting the target was problematic. In turn, this unleashed area bombing without concern for military targets. Immense civilian casualties occurred because of this decision. These strategies on both sides came from internecine struggles over who was in charge. On both sides, the effectiveness of the team was limited by their choices. The eighth plus of team: enable competitiveness in a manner which enhances productivity. Abraham Lincoln is recognized by most as our greatest president. He led us through the Civil War and preserved our nation. He did this with a team of rivals. He brought his three major opponents for the presidential nomination into his cabinet and allowed their competitiveness to struggle to find the best solutions to issues he faced. That we exist as a nation is a tribute to the eighth positive of team. The eighth minus of team is support is based on loyalties, not team goals. Recently, the National Weather Service, whose charge is to provide scientific judgments on pending weather in order to allow citizens to prepare and protect themselves against damage and death from storms, hurricanes, tornadoes, and such, felt compelled to correct a tweet by the president that Alabama would be seriously affected if impacted by Hurricane Dorian. Scientific analysis had previously discounted this possibility. Hurricane Dorian did not impact Alabama. This is a minor item in terms of relative importance. The major impact was the reaction of the president demanding loyalty to him because he cannot possibly make an error. He acquired the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to issue a statement that he may have drawn his conclusions from an earlier briefing. NOAO administrators have criticized the statement, and attention has focused on whether anyone's job is in danger over this kerfluffle. This could be considered a rather silly occurrence were it not for revealing the obscene obsession over personal loyalty by the president. He demanded personal loyalty from the director of the FBI, and when he didn't get it, got him dismissed. This is a frequent occurrence among staff in his cabinet. Most recently, this occurred with John Bolton, who was arguing he resigned but wasn't fired. The president has even accused Fox News of not doing their job because they are not being personally loyal to him. If you don't get that, Fox News' job is not personal loyalty to the president. Teams are multi-edged blade, the most effective and serviceable tool available. In fact, the only effective tool for humans. Also, the biggest mess creator you can imagine if it goes wrong. This is because teams work implicitly, because humans are sapient, intelligent beings. As individuals, they are capable of creativity in identifying problems and finding workable resolutions for the team. They are also able and often willing to pursue their individual desires and goals without regard for any damage to the team effort. This is your basic conundrum. Quick commercial. My book, Ubuntu, I Am Because We Are, is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold, and presents the total picture of the meaning and need for team in the Ubuntu sense. Check it out on my website, johnkeltz.com. That's johnkeltz.com. The question then is, what is required to keep a team balanced and working towards team goals while utilizing their creativity and intelligence in service of those goals? There are three major components to the effective operation of a team. They are structure, belief, and leadership. Structure posits that there are various separate components and operations that need to be accomplished in concert for the team to achieve its goals. How they are connected, how they interact, and how they are supervised and supervised and controlled go a long way in determining team success. For example, the federal government is structured into executive, legislative, and judicial components to accomplish different operations necessary to a functional government. The intention is that these operations should be separate but equal in order to maintain the necessary balancing of power to perform varied, sometimes opposing functions effectively, and keep the overall team focused on goals other than just achieving power towards individual goals. Structure requires guidelines, rules, and regulations to function. Again, we find this is both a strength and a weakness. It is called bureaucracy, and by its nature advances order over accomplishing goals. While this is not necessarily a bad thing per se, it inevitably hampers achieving goals. Recently, I had a relatively minor surgery scheduled when a duplicate problem occurred adjacent to the original problem. I attempted to have the surgery altered to include both sites. Bureaucratic issues over timing to complete the pre-operation process and the approval process for outsourcing the second site to the community meant the VA would pay for the same operation twice. The doctors would have to repeat the operation for no justifiable reason, and I got to go through the aggravation and pain twice. This frequently occurs when order interferes with accomplishing goals. Realignment to address such issues may range from relatively minor changes to rules and regulations, to complete restructuring of team relationships and redefining the purpose of different components of the team. In Vietnam, medevac helicopters flew nearly 500,000 missions. Over 900,000 patients were airlifted. Nearly half were American. The average time lapse between wounding to hospitalization was less than 1 hour. As a result, less than 1% of all Americans wounded who survived the first 24 hours died. The helicopter provided unprecedented mobility. Medevac became routine under challenging conditions. We called it one in once, and the pilot radioed, "Is the LZ clear?" We responded, "It is under heavy fire." The reply, "Roger that. Keep your heads down, we're coming in." The thing is that medevac was not a planned function of the helicopter assets in our first helicopter war. It developed on a small group of pilots, hidden figures, pushed and insisted on it. Their purpose was redefined, and every Vietnam veteran is eternally grateful to them. Belief is the strongest component of team. As such, it is a key to achieving team goals. If the results are not apparent or do not seem reachable, belief can waver, and outside beliefs can intervene and alter team actions while maintaining their pursuing, even strengthening team goals. Most belief is founded in faith more than based on fact. The Allies on D-Day had belief that they would succeed despite the fact that an accomplished army waited for them and had been preparing for their assault for months. They exited their landing craft, many dying before they reached the beach because they had that belief. Fortunately for all of us, that belief became fact. The concern for belief is simply that it has no requirement to be connected to truth or fact. Thus, it is easily manipulated and altered, and often impermeable to factual arguments. The president can claim that immigrants are rapists and bad people with no supporting evidence for that claim, and create a belief in building a wall that is so strong that it can move millions of dollars from funding for real, factual projects that serve the needs of our actual military. The thing is, the largest wall in history, the Great Wall of China, didn't work. Genghis Khan just rode around it. Finally, the most complex component necessary to the success of teams is leadership. There are many effective ways to lead, and many multifaceted elements that may determine the most effective way to lead. Stephen E. Ambrose, in his book D-Day, June 6, 1944, The Climactic Battle of World War II, paints a crystal-clear image of the section of the battle where everything that could possibly go wrong had. He described the leadership on Omaha Beach, which allowed the Allies to succeed, as follows. Quote, "They sized up the situation, saw what had to be done, and did it. This was leadership of the highest order." Unquote. In Vietnam, I found the only truly effective approach to leadership was twofold. First, everyone had to commit to the belief in the necessity of accomplishing the mission and be willing to pay the cost, even if it meant dying. Second, the leadership had to have the troops back and demonstrate that with more than words. Having sized up the situation and determined what needed to be done, I acted as a leader in ways that allowed my troops to accomplish every mission we were assigned and enable my men to stay alive by having their backs in the field and in base camp. I would note that my hardest fights were with structure, bureaucracy, some of the dumbest rules and regulations imaginable, such as a higher rank made you correct and be to obeyed regardless of ordering stupidity that would get people killed, and with belief, mostly that our enemy was from a fourth-rate country and couldn't possibly damage us. Fighting Mr. Victor Charles was easier. All he was trying to do was kill us. A quick reminder. Ubuntu, I Am Because We Are, by John M. Kelch, is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. Check it out on my website, johnkelch.com. That's johnkelsch.com. We actually spell it funny just to confuse you guys. It's a German name and the O is silent in English. On our next show, I will highlight some of this, the history of how we got to where we are with some extraordinarily challenging problems and explain why team is the only approach that can provide hope of a peaceful resolution to these issues. Until then, I greet you, Ubuntu. Thank you for listening.